the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Lise Hand and Dave Hanrahan here are with me for the week trending. And I want to start with Pope Leo, who made a 40,000 word plus essay that he put out today, or put out on Monday, about artificial intelligence. So let's just hear a very brief clip from it.
Artificial intelligence needs to be disarmed. The word is strong, I know, but deliberately chosen because this moment needs words capable of attracting attention, awakening consciences, and indicating paths forward for humanity.
That's just a small bit of what was in a very detailed document. Dave Hanratty, what did you make of it all?
Well, the first thing is, I hope he didn't use ChatGPT for his 40,000 words, because otherwise he will then be labelled a hypocrite. So I hope he sat down with pen and parchment and put this together. I found myself surprised, but then I was wondering, well, why am I surprised? I guess he's from the old school, right? And like, I'm not religious, but this might make me convert, because I am extremely anti-AI when it comes to specific things. I should throw in my usual caveat of there are parts of the world and there are industries, medical and so on, where AI does have a place and so on and so forth. But he's talking about warfare. He's talking about disinformation. My own bugbear is in the creative arts when it comes to generative AI. I mean, there's also the environmental impact. There's people losing their jobs. There's a passive acceptance of this. I feel that we're in a world where some billionaires have convinced people to go, no, you need this. And it's like, no, you don't. This is their toys and they need it for their quarterly earnings. And I wish as a society we would be more resistant to this. And I find myself in an unexpected ally in Pope Leo. I'm delighted that he's come out with this.
What did you make of it, Lise Hand?
I think it is absolutely fascinating. This Pope really is sort of has come out swinging, you know, and he's probably the right Pope for the right time. We have an American born Chicagoan who's well able to go toe to toe with President Trump. And you know, he is very plugged in to the modern world. Like, he's not one of these sort of remote figures. And, you know, several things fascinated. The timing was interesting. And obviously, the Vatican are very cognizant about the sort of the long arc of history, so to speak. And, you know, this did happen literally 135 years to the day that the previous Leo, which was Leo XIII, had published his own encyclical, which would have been 135 years ago, so 1890, around
1891.
Then. 1891, thank you very much. And it was written in response to the impact made by modern industry on the world, on the rapidly changing world, and did actually have a big effect. So,
and
now,
did that focus on labour rights in particular?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you had a pivotal moment when, you know, we were about to go into our sort of peak industrial age. And now this guy comes along with this. And the thing that fascinated me most about it was one of the people that worked very closely with him was actually a cleric called Father Brendan Maguire, who is Irish, born in Dublin, trained in, went to college in Trinity. Obviously, was a very early adapter into computers and so on. Ended up, you know, moving to LA, staying in, and obviously would have been a kind of an early figure in the whole thing about computation and so on. Then joined the priesthood. But what I found absolutely fascinating was one of the Anthropic's co-founders, and Anthropic, of course, are the company that have produced one of the most powerful advanced AIs, Claude. But Chris Ola actually went to Father Brendan Maguire and said, we need the help from the Vatican. We actually need help to try help the industry, because this is all happening so fast. A lot of people have developed a belief that there is, you know, there's a God in the machine and so on. And we kind of need a bit of religious intervention here. So, you know, we had this situation when one of the founders of the most advanced AI literally tapped the Vatican up to try and come up with a sort of a constitution.
It's a good job it was a Father Brendan Maguire instead of a Father Dougal Maguire, wasn't it? But anyway,
it might be Dougal Maguire by the end of it, though.
I mean, there's been some criticism of the encyclical in that it's maybe way too long and that people won't read it. And I can understand that, you know, there is the possibility. But, and then sometimes it's quite wordy in the way it's written, but there is really interesting stuff in there. For example, he warned of the growing ease, as he described it, with which autonomous weapon systems can be deployed, making them less subject to human control. He said, "It's not permissible to entrust lethal or otherwise irreversible decisions to artificial systems," calling for an identifiable and verifiable chain of responsibility and effective self-aware and responsible human control over bomb targets. And what struck me as interesting in that is that he's not advocating that people should use bombs, but he understands that it does happen. And if it is, you must control it. So he's worried about things like drones and people literally sort of in little bunkers playing war games without having any real understanding of the human consequences of their actions. But it also struck me that it was a none too subtle swipe at Donald Trump and what happened in Iran and the 160 schoolgirls that were killed in a bombing mission and the early days of the war that has been waged against Iran. Because it looks very much there as if they mistakenly identified the target. They had the wrong information. Yeah. And this is the type of thing large language models work on, old information, often incorrect information. And that's why artificial intelligence gets things wrong.
But there's always a footnote. If someone uses ChatGPT or another, you know, kind of form of it, there's a stamp at the bottom that says, you know, disclaimer, this might not be correct, by the way. And that's what's driving me crazy in my own job as a researcher and a producer, and also just seeing kind of a new generation of people coming up. And it's like, did you actually do the research yourself, or did you trust this thing? You can't trust that thing. You got to double source everything and so on and so forth. But like everything you're saying there, and there's been so much media forever about future wars and what they will look like, that they will be fought by robots and drones and all this kind of stuff, and human beings will barely play a part of it. So taking a swipe at Trump makes perfect sense as well. And we are in this kind of constant ecosystem now where everything is memed as soon as it's mentioned, and people are using generative AI to do that. People are using generative AI to write eulogies at funerals. They're using it for music. They're using it for films. And again, it's hellacious impact on the world in terms of the amount of water it takes and the data centers and this, that, and the other. But even just like I say, if I can bring back to the creative side for a second there, people are skipping to the end. We used to talk about 10,000 hours and putting in 10,000 hours into mastering an instrument or becoming an artist or doing this and that, whatever. The process is so important. And now it's just like, oh, I wrote a book in 2 days with ChatGPT. You didn't. Let me tell you, you didn't. And so like I say, you know, I'm delighted that this is a talking point and that people in upper echelons of some offices are saying no to this. Because even like Sam Altman, saw a clip of him the other day where he was talking about how he wants intelligence to be metered like water and like other natural resources. This is what they want to do. They want to sell what should be like a basic human right, a fundamental thing, back to you to make more money for them. Billionaires are not your friends. They don't care about you. And this is just another example of it.
Yeah, but the thing is that, what is it, there are 1.4 billion Catholics in the world. I wonder how many of that 1.4 billion will take notice of what the Pope has said in relation to this. And then somebody like Elon Musk has about 240 million followers on the platform that he controls, X. And the algorithms are that everybody who's on that platform gets his posts unless they have deliberately blocked him. And he has on that platform followers who are more devoted to him than Catholics might be to God. There's a sort of he has a messianic zeal in relation to all sorts of mad things, and
yeah, but
people
Pope,
follow
is,
him.
Yeah, true. But I think the Pope Leo is, with, you know, with this massive encyclical, he's really trying to aim this at the people who are in the decision-making process. I mean, we have a you know, we have a situation, it's the worst scenario, really, where you have all the bros, tech bros of Silicon Valley, charging ahead, trying to outdo each other, trying to bring out the most sophisticated AI that they possibly can. At the same time that you have a Trump administration, which is completely determined to tear down any potential guardrails and safety, you know, safety codes around the development. So it's almost like this sort of the gold rush in the Klondike, you know, it's completely out of control. Everybody's scrapping to make more money. Nobody really cares about the potential sort of fallout and consequences of trying to rein this in. So, I mean, I really think this is Pope Leo sending up a kind of, you know, the bat signal going, lads, we need to, you know, really TLDR, just, you know, put some guardrails on, understand the massive responsibility that this has. As you rightly pointed out, we've already seen the absolute and utter heartbreaking consequences, enraging consequences of when it goes wrong, which we saw in the school in Minab, which will be, you know, it's an absolute stain on America for not apologising for that or taking any kind of responsibility. So, You know, this is this. If this encyclical gets people talking, and at least, and you know, people feel that there's some strong kind of world figure that's prepared to go toe to toe and front up to him. That's important. Up to Trump. I mean, well, that's important too.
I'm just going to quote another couple of pieces from it. He said, "So-called artificial intelligence do not undergo experiences, do not possess a body, do not feel joy or pain, do not mature through relationships, and do not know from within what love, work, friendship, or responsibility mean." He wrote in this document, he mentioned the word dignity 100 times. The various kinds of job insecurity, fragmented career paths and automation must not be elevated solely in terms of efficiency, but in relation to the dignity of the worker, the right to sufficient remuneration and the genuine possibility of participating in society. There's loads more like that. A listener says, great to hear this getting airtime. Targeted AI is useful, but superintelligence poses existential risks to humanity. We need a global agreement for responsible and ethical AI development. This issue is far more urgent than climate change. Funnily enough, his predecessor, Pope Francis, issued a scathing encyclical about the implications of climate change back in 2015. For all the good, I say that probably did. And I just wonder, will this on AI do much good?
Can I say one last thing? One of the first words we heard the Pope say in this encyclical there, at least in the news story that we're looking at here, is disarm. Like, and that is not an accident. And when you were reading out that list there of the way he kind of said, like, AI isn't capable of this, isn't capable of that, can't do this, it made me think of the Terminator, the film The Terminator. And there's a speech in that where Kyle Reese says, you know, about the Terminator, it does not feel pain, it will not stop, it won't stop until you're dead. Like, it can't be bargained with, it can't be reasoned with. And, like, that's a sci-fi film about paranoia in, you know, the 1980s. And it's more relevant today than ever. And I know it sounds kind of trite and cheesy to quote The Terminator, but that's kind of what where we're at. I mean, the fact that he says this needs to be disarmed, it's like, yes, well, it does.
Well, you have a situation where you have a Pope, you know, and he's defending, you know, workers, trying to protect workers, defending workers' rights, and, you know, trying to impose some guardrails. I'm sure we're only one Truth Social post away from Donald Trump calling him a commie.
Well, given that we've mentioned Trump, let's talk about Trump. We try to keep Trump out of the week trending, that there's enough of Trump, but there's a couple of stories which I think actually are worthy of examination. One, Lise, is we remember the woman, E. Jean Carroll, who secured a conviction against Donald Trump. Although CNN, in the story that it had this week, Justice Department launches a criminal investigation into Trump accuser E. Jean Carroll. Not Trump accuser. She won her case.
Yeah.
He was found guilty.
He was.
So immediately the headline is actually reducing the impact of what she actually achieved.
Yeah.
But then the idea that Trump is now using his Justice Department to launch a criminal investigation into her, to weaponize it, the type of thing that Trump has always claimed that he's been the victim of.
Well, I mean, he's turned the department into something that bends to his will, and he is on a campaign of vengeance. It's as simple as that. I mean, if you look at, you know, and of course, this is different. I mean, if you look at other figures that he has tried to, you know, pursue litigation against, like figures as opposed to institutions, he's obviously gone after newspapers, but people like James Comey, Adam Schiff, John Brennan, these are all Letitia James. These would all be politicians or figures in the political arena. But this is an 82-year-old private citizen. And this marks a kind of a shift in his, you know, that he's taking it to another level now, that the malevolence that he's unleashing on people that he feels have done him wrong is now being turned on a private citizen. And, you know, that's an extremely alarming development, because, you know, he is literally bringing the power of, you know, an entire department, an entire justice system to bear on a citizen. Who, by the way, her only fault was actually basically winning her case and winning, you know, 5 million. She was awarded 5 million in damages after the civil trial found Trump liable for sexual abuse and defamation. And the defamation bit was interesting, because this is what he always does. He comes out and just goes immediately on the attack. And, you know, straight away after when that case was over, she, you know, he was calling her a total whack job and claimed that the attack could never happen because she wasn't, quote unquote, his type. So you have somebody who just doubles down at every single time. You know, this is a guy who will always bring a gun to a knife fight. You know, he always will just double down. But now when you have the president of the United States, the most powerful figure in America, basically unleashing his department to attack a private citizen, I mean, that's a slippery slope.
And moving on, also, the ego is such that he now wants banknotes, 250 euro banknotes with his portrait on them.
And he would be the first sitting president since 1866 to have such a luxury item made in his image, literally in his image. Yeah, this is a story that kind of broke because I guess employees who work in this establishment have come out anonymously because they fear retribution and said that they've been pressed by Trump administration officials to have this. This is, of course, to coincide with the 250th anniversary of the United States of America, which takes place on the 4th of July. There's all kinds of celebrations for this, including, of course, the UFC fight at the White House, which is taking place on the 14th of June, not the 4th of July. Why the 14th of June? Well, it's because it's Donald Trump's 80th birthday. And that's more important than, of course, 250 years of America.
Aren't they building a giant stage for this?
An octagon.
Octagon, right? Yeah. And they're doing all outdoor seating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But how is that going to be safe? If he says he needs the ballroom for security reasons, then how is an outdoor octagon going to be safe?
It's going to be 5,000
people.
It'll
be full of MMA fighters. That's why it'll be safe.
That's part of it, yeah.
You know, that's going to be part of it.
People in attendance are all vetted. I think they're all military members and such, so it's not the general public, although there will be like a massive screening party nearby in a park, which again, I'm sure the security guards will be out in force. But that's taking place in the lawn of the White House. It's going to cost $60 million to host. Trump isn't paying for that, of course, himself whatsoever. I thought it was funny in the story, though, that like the lady, Patricia Solomini, I think is her name, who was the printing director, and she was pushing back against this effort from happening and, of course, naturally was reassigned to a different department. And in her goodbye letter to her staff, she said, "The book stopped here." So which fair play to her.
Fair play.
Mind you, it will give us a new phrase, won't it? As crooked as a $250 bill, which will probably enter the lexicon.
Dave, one of the stories that has got a lot of attention during the week, Dublin City Council complaining about the cost to wit of having to re-clean the streets because people seem to be digging into bins to pull out bottles and cans that qualify for the return scheme. Tell us about this.
Well, I believe the official formal terminology here is bin interference, which is a new one for me. So apparently 3 hours in every 24-hour cleaning cycle is being diverted to take care of this problem. And also it's Dublin City Council has claimed that it is costing €500,000 so far in terms of just constant upkeep and, I guess, policing the situation. So yeah, this is obviously following off the back of the deposit return scheme, which we all know has added an extra, 15 cents or slightly more, depending on what you're getting.
15 cents usually, yeah.
I've definitely been charged more somewhere. I don't know. I must look into this. But yeah, if you get yourself a bottle of something and scan it across, there you go, extra charge, and you can bring your bottles back, get the money back, et cetera, et cetera. Which I guess, on the face of it, makes sense. And some people think it's a very good system. I personally find it a bit irritating. Now, granted, I haven't.
Pity about you. Isn't it actually good environmental reasons?
Well, this is the thing.
You find it irritating.
And I am pro. So I recognize that I have walked right into your trap, and I will now be castigated on national radio, as I should be, because I am pro environmental as much as one can. So I'm not like, this isn't.
In theory, but not in practice.
I'm not trying to stop this. I will say, but yes, in this situation it's obviously causing a bit of havoc as well. And look, I mean, like, if someone's digging through a bin, like, maybe they're really unfortunate and they need money. Like, I don't want to punch down on someone who's in that situation, and I hope that headlines of this don't encourage people to do that, because like, I think there is a human element of this buried in the mix as well. But obviously, if you're going to instill this system, and if these things can be seen as, well, I can get money for that, I feel like this was inevitable. Like, I feel like this is something that they should have factored in going like when planning it.
Yeah, no, true. I mean, I agree. They probably should have factored it in. I think the scheme is brilliant and I avail of it on a regular basis. And I actually find maybe there's something destructive in me, but I actually really enjoy like putting those cans and bottles through the plastic ones through the down the little conveyor belt. And that sort of crunchy sound.
It sounds great. Yeah, in fairness.
I mean, it's actually great. And they do add up.
Brings out the child in you, does it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, there's something kind of, there is something brilliant about that noise. And then, you're watching and it's amazing how quickly it adds up because, and it's
you're only getting your own money back. It's not free money.
Yes, I know that. But it's great when, you think about all the, bottles of water or cans of Coke or the odd sort of, cans of beer or whatever. And you're sort of getting something back. I know technically it's my own money, but there is something. And then you can use that money to go and buy other beer. So, look, I think it's a great scheme. I think it's been hugely successful. You know it by you just don't see cans and bottles littering around the place anymore. You mean you used to see them.
That is a fair point.
Just the same way that we used to see plastic bags flapping from tree branches. yeah. and skittling down roads in a wind. You don't see that anymore. So these things do have, no, they have made it, they do make a difference.
Do you ever see as well, though, at a festival, and we are coming into festival season now, you know, if you bring back the pint glass, because they charge you extra for that, and you will, you can make a killing on that. And you will always see a couple of enterprising souls milling around with these things that look like the size of a tower, and they just stack them. And I always say, fair play to that man or that lady. They're going to go home with a bit of cash, and they're doing good for the environment. So, look, I recognise it. I'm pro it. But Matt pointing out there again, saying that it's not free money, it's getting your money back. That's my bugbear. I'm being overcharged for a product for this, and then I don't, like, clearly, like, I'm the fool, because I just tend to, you know, put a bottle into the green bin if there is one around, and I don't go back to this shop to do this. So I'm missing out on some beautiful ASMR by the sounds of things.
Yeah, it's good ASMR, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, tell me about the Luke Kelly statue in Sheriff Street, Lisa.
Ah, poor old
what's
Luke.
Been happening to this?
Yeah, poor old Luke.
Describe the statue in the first place for those who might not be familiar with it.
It was created by a sculptor called Vera Clute, and it's very unlike anything else that's in Dublin. I mean, it's sort of enormous decapitated head. I mean, it does kind of look like something that you would have seen on a spike, you know, during the French Revolution.
But, yes.
It's really unusual. It's this sort of ginormous head, and it's completely covered in his famous wiry hair.
He had a big head of hair
copper.
In him.
Yeah, and this is coils of copper.
Yeah.
He had a grand big head of hair in him. It's very distinct, very unusual. It has been subjected to acts of vandalism before, but now it just turns out that people, they've had to undergo, it's going now on extensive repair because it is suffering from male pattern baldness, essentially, because people are just going up and swiping some of the copper hairs out of it.
What? For why?
Souvenirs.
It's just, I mean, obviously just souvenirs. I mean, it is kind of bizarre, but, you know, it's a shame. I mean, the trouble is what happens in these, with these instances is that the statues then have to be, or the, you know, have to be cordoned off. So this is what's the inevitable result of this, means that it's going to be put behind a cordon. I mean, we saw it happen to Molly Malone recently as well, because people kept on touching her boobs for luck. And, you know, to the point where they just had to literally put flower beds around her as well.
Was it always for luck, or was it people being annoyingly?
Well, it was technically, it started off apparently with tour guides, you know, jokingly probably saying, you know, touch them for luck. And then it became, of course, a thing to
lads on stag parties and that kind
of
thing. Yeah,
stags and everything, and pretty unedifying looking. But, you know, again, she had to. And, it, you know, statues are great, right? I'm a big fan of them. I think there should be loads of them. My big bugbear, of course, is out of the 75 statues, I think, dotted around the capital city, I think there's less than 10 are women, which is one of my massive bugbears. But I think they're a great representation. They're a great way to pay tribute to people. And I think the more creative they are, like the Luke Kelly one is you know, is great. But there is another statue of Luke right up outside, almost outside the studio.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't get interfered with.
Well, it's much less deranged, let's
be
fair.
Yeah, I think it's just the madness of that one, because you've got Philo then.
It is unhinged. I mean, there's Luke Kelly statue.
Which is perfect.
Yeah.
You've got, like, the lovely one of Oscar Wilde down in Merrion Square, which, again, is really zany.
Yeah.
But that tends to be left.
Befitting of the Oscar Wilde character, I guess. And it's
yeah.
But this one, this is Schrodinger's statue for me, because I can never make up my mind on this. Some days I see a complete eyesore, a total monstrosity that terrifies children. And other days I'm like, that's outsider art. That's brilliant. That's unique. That's cool. That's Irish. And I can't make my mind up on it, because like, if you're coming around the corner and you're seeing this thing, it is crazy, right?
But it sort of looks like I'm sitting in a pub, you know, singing Raglan Road or something, you know.
But as a severed head.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some people.
This is stuff of nightmares.
That's art, Dave. That's art.
I've actually heard Raglan Road been sung like it's been sung from a severed head, to be absolutely honest with you. But, you know, I think it's great. I think, but people need to have a bit of respect. I mean, it is a work of art. Take your photographs, take your selfies, blah, blah, blah. But don't be going pulling hair out, you know, pulling like hair out of them.
Because, okay,
you know,
I've got lots of comments coming in about the way that the bottle return. We see bottles, cans and waste thrown in the streets every day, Monday to Friday, with secondary school kids. They treat our community as a waste bin, just throw everything everywhere. So no, a lot of people don't put it in the bin and don't return, says Mick in Kilkenny. Another one says, I despise the return scheme. Half the machines can be full or broken down. Plus, we are losing hours off our lives queuing to return the vessels. Another one says, did Lisa recycle her bottles and cans before the scheme? I'm guessing she probably did. Did you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I did.
All the scheme does is make it more difficult for her and penalises people who were recycling but may be unable or unwilling to trudge along to one of these filthy machines and wait in line for the privilege.
There's a lot of
anger out there.
The secondary school kids haven't learned about
it's
capitalism
actually,
yet.
Though, so. Interestingly, I think an awful lot of the beefs that people have when I'm listening here are actually with the fact that a lot of the machines are banjaxed or not accessible rather than the actual hostility against the scheme.
Oh, yeah, it's the implementation
itself.
Of it, which in fairness, that's a very valid complaint.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you're going to roll out something on this level, you got to make sure the stuff works. Like, yeah. And by the way, it mightn't be a bad idea to have them, say, installed along places like beaches and so on as well, because, like, you know, once again, anybody who lives near a beach is going to just wake up after a sunny day and there's just going to be bottles and cans everywhere. So I do agree with the person who did call in saying it's just awful the way that people don't clean up after, you know, after the beach. I live near, you know, near the coast, and sometimes it just looks like a disaster zone after a hot sunny day at a weekend.
This week in particular, yeah.
Speaking of hot sunny days, should VAT on sunscreen products be scrapped?
Probably, yeah. I mean, I think the case is being made here, like by, you know, Cancer Research UK and various other places, that this is actually a health issue. This isn't just a cosmetic, you know, and if you pay €20 for this, €4.75 of that or whatever is going to be coming out of the VAT. I just thought it was really interesting to kind of see that, like, this story kind of arose because there was the body that represents the sunbed salons in the UK, which I did not know such a thing even existed, but it's Sunbed Association.
It represents UK and Ireland. We had their spokesperson on this programme during the week arguing with a cancer specialist.
Yeah, so this is the thing. I mean, I find myself wondering, like, if you're a lobbyist for the sunbeds and salons of the world, like, what turn did you take in life?
I mean, the facts stand for themselves. I mean, it is the most common form of cancer in Ireland, skin cancer.
11,000
people a year. So, you know, you would think that, particularly given the ferns of Irish skin, that I think people have got better about it. But, I mean, there is absolutely no reason that this is a cosmetic. This is not. This is a medical thing. This is, like, a preventative. So, I think it's insane to basically throw it in the same category as, you know, foundation or any kind of cosmetic, you know, treatments or whatever. But so I think there's a huge argument to be made at the EU level, and particularly given climate change. I mean, we have the entirety of the European continent at the moment sweltering in May with temperatures normally that you normally see in July. So you would think that even just to, I suppose, take into account the fact that the climate, you know, summers are getting hotter. This is a medical thing.
So. Speaking of medical things, I was also, Dave, very surprised to read that over the last decade, we've had nearly 200 people killed on our roads because they were in car crashes and it turned out they hadn't been wearing their seatbelts. I thought that I grew up in an era where lots of people did not wear their seatbelts. I think it was the 1990s when it really came that there was an enforcement of making sure that people had to. I remember lots of people seeking exemptions in relation to particularly taxi drivers. But eventually it came around to it that I thought everybody wore their seatbelts. And yet this number of people, unfortunately, lost their lives because they didn't.
Yeah, the number in total is 194. And it doesn't surprise me. And I hate saying that because working in the media and getting press releases from the guards about road traffic collisions on almost a daily basis. And we see the stats come out and we see the campaigns and slow down day and all that kind of thing. And it just doesn't seem to be working. Whether it's seatbelts, whether it's people using their phones or just not paying attention for whatever reason, driving impaired, you name it, these problems keep exacerbating. Personally, I don't drive. Now, part of that is privilege. I've never had to. I've always lived in an area where everything is walkable, and also I quite like public transport in that weird way. But I also don't want to drive because I don't feel safe in cars. I don't feel like I won't not get into them or anything, but I don't feel safe in cars. I don't feel safe on Irish roads, and nothing I've seen in the last 10 years has done anything to dissuade that.
You know, that's actually quite a logical thing because, you know, the way people say that they're afraid of flying, for example, you don't hear people say they're afraid of driving. You hear them say they're afraid of flying. Statistically, you're way safer in an aircraft than you are actually in a car on your way to the airport.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I've always looked at it. Like,
yeah, I certainly, as a driver, I would not literally put the car into first gear without putting on my seatbelt. And I mean, anyone that doesn't put on a seatbelt it's bonkers. It's actually insane to think that somebody would get into something that could go at 100 kilometres an hour and literally would not actually put on a seatbelt, because if that thing hits anything, even at, you know, less
than... And it's not guaranteed to save you, but it increases your chances.
It massively increases your chances, because if you go out through the, you know, if you are ejected through the front windscreen of a car at high velocity, your chances of, you know, of actually walking away from that absolute melee are very, very slim. So it's nonsense.
Could it be, though, that there was a generation of people who was hammered home, particularly in the 1990s, and then everybody, it seemed, took to wearing the seatbelts. So the campaigns moved on to other things, such as speed, practice drink driving. People then, a new generation comes along, doesn't think of it, doesn't realise, because they're not told on a regular basis how dangerous it is.
Yeah, I mean, a bit of common sense. This black strap, you know, basically locking you in will stop you being ejected at a violent rate through the windscreen of your car should anything happen.
Okay, very interesting. John Summers in Sandyford says, the statue of Luke Kelly is him singing Scorn Not His Simplicity, which was written by Phil Coulter about his own son. The statue is based on a still from the famous video of him singing the song. It's an incredible piece of art and captures him as a person and a magical singer.
Beautiful. I totally agree with that.
That's a nice way of finishing off. Thank you very much, Lise and Dave Hanratty, for being with us for the week trending.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.